Ladies and gentlemen, you know what that sound means. It means it's episode 193 of the Personal Arrogance Podcast, brought to you by the Bald Move Network. I, of course, am one of your hosts. My name is Eric, still missing Jesse Walquist. And joining me this week, once again, is the guy who's filling in for J-Dog. It is...
Levi, still not Jesse Wilson, Jetty.
Still not Jesse Wilson, but doing a valiant job, sir.
I'm trying my best.
The effort is there. That's the best compliment I can give you.
That's a nice compliment. I'll take it.
You should take it. Anyway, this is the part of the show where I ask the co-host, how was your week?
It was good. It was busy.
Mm-hmm. So you design breweries.
Yes. We do a lot of scales. We work on some mom and pop size shops, and we work right up to the, not the big boys, but the boys we like, which now I regret saying that out loud.
Well, good on you, man. I'm excited for you. I this week am living a bachelor life.
Ooh, Lydia, where's the wife?
She has decided to travel to the East Coast to visit her brother for the week and her sister-in-law and their lovely dog. And therefore, I am stuck at home watching movies and drinking beer and not doing a whole lot.
So are you enjoying it or... is it like, because that's always, I always find that I have that it's like great for 2 days and then after that I just get lonely.
I'm on the third day. Let's just put it that way. I'm kind of right with, like, I was watching movies, I was playing Madden, I was going to bed at like 12:30, I was having a blast, but not really. I still miss my wife, but now today I got a little bored. So I'm happy I get to hang out with you, man. Because otherwise, I'd just be talking to myself.
Well, we could just make this whole cast a love letter to her. And you can just email it to
her. Yeah, we haven't done a dedication in a long time. We dedicate this one to the wifey. Lydia, I love you so much. I wish you were here. And it sounds like this is the beginning of a joke, but I'm actually just being 100% serious.
Poetic.
Thank you. I feel sad. But you know, this is like, I abandoned her earlier in the year to go down to San Diego and hang out with you buffoons.
Yeah.
So this is pretty much just payback.
It's a lot easier being the one that goes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, you got stuff to do. Like,
you're swimming in raw sewage.
You're swimming in raw sewage in the ocean. It's a blast. Actually, Lydia, she went out on the Chesapeake Bay yesterday and, she like dipped her toe in and apparently it was like really warm, and apparently the Chesapeake Bay can get up to like 75 degrees in the water.
Yes.
And then somebody was like, yeah, but the pollution. And I was like, pollution? I know about pollution. I know 100% about pollution. If you don't know what I'm talking about, refer back to the BiPax episode. It's like in the early 180s.
Was it really not that long ago?
No, not at all, dude. That's another thing.
2 months?
Yeah, San Diego was like not very long ago. Yeah, 2 months
like forever.
Ago. Anyway, sir, we got to get this show on the road, man.
Isn't that what we're doing?
I guess so. What are you drinking this week?
I am drinking another Colorado beer, one that we have not worked on. Mm-hmm. Odell Brewing Company's Loose Leaf American Session Ale.
Cool.
It's really tasty.
Awesome. I am drinking the Rogue Juniper Pale Ale.
Ooh.
That's just another thing, is that I have been buying a lot of beer lately, being all by myself and my lonesome. And I've been buying some nice beer, too, because I've been saving some money, too. That's the other thing about being lonely, is you save money.
Yeah, when you have the time, when you're just cooking for yourself,
yeah,
it's a lot faster. When you're alone, you look for things to do, so you go out and buy beer and stuff to cook.
But you like buy beer and then you come home and play Madden.
Yes.
Like, there's no reason to go out and spend any money. So, anyway, I've been saving money. I did book a couple of camping trips.
Ooh,
trying to be productive. So, we already have this booked, but this May, or at the end of the month here, we're going to be going down to Bend, Oregon for Memorial Day weekend.
Nice.
And then we're going to be going to Mount St. Helens in June. And then we're going to be camping up in the North Cascades in July. So stoked.
Sounds lovely. So one a month? Is that the goal?
Yeah, I want to do one a month from April through September. So we hit April up at Deception Pass, and then we got through July booked. And in August, I'm hoping to camp with J-Dog and the fam.
Oh man, so jealous.
It's going to be a blast. So anyway, we also got some listener feedback this week and just a couple of phone calls. So we'll start it off with a wonderful call from our good buddy over in the UK, Sam Golmohammadi. Here he is.
Hello, personal arrogance. I've been away for a while. Come back today with another terrible accent for you. This is Sam from the UK. Anyway, what is my point? So I'm phoning up today, May the 3rd Saturday, because it is, as you know, Free Comic Day. And I wanted to ask you, what are you looking forward to today? But most importantly, forget about even this year. How about next year? Because next year, Free Comic Book Day is going to coincide with May the 4th, believe you. So, what would you like to see then? I'm kind of hoping that they'll start a new Star Wars franchise in the comic industry and then give the first issue out on that day. Okay, that's just me. Anyway, just to say as well, why am I doing this weird, if I'm doing it right, kind of Eastern European sounding accent? And I'll tell you why. Because Vladimir Klitschko won another fight on the weekend against a terrible opponent. And that's my final point. If you're interested in boxing, is it worthwhile? Is there anything good to look forward to anymore in it? Gone are the days of Tyson. Anyway, thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Sam. Get off my back.
Get off my back.
I do feel like a wonderful part about that whole thing was his reference to boxing. And I feel like boxing is a sport that now is only popular in countries that actually celebrate Boxing Day.
Well, I don't think those are related, though.
Are they not? I don't even know. I've never followed boxing.
No. I mean boxing. Boxing Day and boxing, I believe, mm-hmm. are unrelated.
I understand what you're saying. Also, that Eastern European accent, all I can visualize when Sam does that accent is the villains from the Rocky and Bullwinkle series.
See, I picture Constantine the Evil Frog from the most recent Muppet movie. Which was a pretty friggin' good movie. I'm not gonna lie.
I didn't know what you were talking about, but when you said Constantine the Evil Frog, I literally just spit out beer all over the place because it sounds like something that is so Levi that he would know and fully understand the character of Constantine the Evil Frog, even out of context from any storyline. That is a Levi thing to do. You just Levi'd yourself hard, man.
Oh, and I've really tried not to on this.
You out Levi'd yourself, and I loved it. It made me so
happy. Everybody knows my terrible secret. I get weird, weird references.
The weirdest. You think our references are weird. Levi's references are the weirdest. My favorite reference was when we were at Disneyland and you ran up to us and you said bangarang, and then you said all I wanted was a good bangarang. Of course, speaking about Rufio from Hook saying bangarang to the Lost Boys. Somehow projecting that on... I'm guessing you thought you were Rufio.
I think I was just looking for the camaraderie of the Lost Boys.
Okay.
Because we were, you know, on this adventure together. rest in peace, Bob Hoskins.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I totally forgot he was Smee, wasn't he?
That was, I think, the best out of all the things people listed him. I think it's
Who framed Roger Rabbit? Best. Who framed Roger Rabbit is definitely the best.
I don't know that movie has stood the test of time.
I watched it a little while ago. It has. It still amazed me at like how much they were able to integrate the cartoons with the real world. They like just Mary Poppins the shit out of it. It was so good.
I'll have to go back and watch it.
And of course, who can forget the Super Mario Brothers movie?
I think most people have forgotten.
Yeah, probably. That's probably good, actually. Okay, we got one more call. It comes to us from the East Coast. Actually, very close to my where my wife is right now. In Virginia. Here it is.
Hey, it's Michael McBride from Virginia again. Figured I'd call about... Well, I called last week about some bad movies, Star Wars prequels to be particular. I figured I'd call about some bad movies again, but this time a little bit more enjoyable. I was wondering, what was probably both of your guys' favorite guilty pleasure movie? I know that I've got one or two because I kind of secretly like the Transformer movies, even though I know they're horrible. I just, hey, the action in them is fun, at least, if nothing else. Even though the humor is just god-awful. All right, but figured it'd be an interesting little idea. All right, guys. stay off my back.
You stay off my back, Michael. And actually, this is a perfect, another perfect situation for you, Levi. Because I feel like you like a lot of bad movies that's so bad they're good movies. I feel like this is one of the things that you and Jesse can really bond over, is the so bad it's good movies.
Yeah, we definitely have a knack for it.
You have the camaraderie around that particular thing. So I will say that I actually really like the first Transformer movie. I liked it when it first came out. I got a buzz off of it. I didn't even see any of the other ones. Because, like, I was like, okay, I'm done. I don't need another 2.5 hours of that. I think I'm good. Let's put a bow on it, Michael Bay, and then maybe just move on. But you know, they only made like $600 million after that. So what do you know? Yeah, exactly. And of course, there is Kung Pao Under the Fist, which is like the ultimate guilty pleasure movie for our team.
Yeah, there's one I reference all the time, and nobody knows what I'm talking about.
Nobody knows. Like,
I have Liz saying "Stars Above"
without any context.
She doesn't have any idea where it comes from, or hasn't seen the scene.
Stars Above.
She just has heard me say it so many times that it's stuck.
And like that brain. that was a seminal movie for our high school nerddom.
Well, it was the peak of our formative years. Like, we really. developed an identity. We developed character that year.
We developed an identity around that movie, I think. Like, that was a movie. I remember the first time I watched it. It was at Nils Thompson's house. I know this is really going deep for you listeners here. But yeah, it was at Nils's house. And when that scene comes around where he goes, "That's a lot of fries!" I was literally rolling on the floor laughing. And I couldn't stop laughing. I've never laughed that hard at a movie ever before in my entire life. And I think it was a combination of me discovering my nerddom all at once. And then the hilarity of the scene and the hilarity of the movie and the build up to that point. And then probably a lot of Mountain Dew. I'm just guessing.
It was about the time that you started hanging out with what I would have deemed the cool kids. You hung out with them less than with us a lot more.
Yeah. Well, you know, like my sophomore year of high school, I hung out with like all seniors.
You got out of that Rich Top crowd.
I got out of the Rich Top crowd, which was like, it was like the other school. Like everybody who went to our high school went to Fairview Junior High. And then there were like the Rich Top kids who got split up between different high schools. And I was in the Rich Top group. So I like hung out with everybody that I knew from my church youth group who are all high school seniors. So I was hanging out with all these seniors. Problem with that, once junior year came around, no more friends. They all went to college.
Yeah, start over with us.
So then the nerds started nerding it up and meeting in Knowledge Bowl and Drama Club. And then the rest is history.
Tag Facebook and link to this episode. Just some of the people we reference.
Well, you know the high school reunion's coming up. We should post this on the high school reunion page.
Can we post it with a "fuck you guys"? Nobody wants to go to that.
Oh, man. I feel like, you know, you don't even need to write the book, but it's just like such a formative statement is just saying Facebook killed the high school reunion.
It did. I know where everybody is that I care about, and I know that everybody I disliked fucked up.
Well, I just know what where everybody's at. Balance. Like, all of the small talk I would have had at the high school reunion has all taken place. And the people who I want to hang out with from high school, I hang out with.
Yeah.
That's it. So, I don't know. Danny, what was the question? Oh, yeah, guilty pleasure movies, dude. This is your forte. Why don't you spill into some good guilty pleasure films?
Oh, God. This is the thing is that for the listeners, I have probably of our group second. I'm second in movie knowledge to you, Eric.
This is different, though. I mean, I have like a formal movie knowledge just because I went to, you know, I studied film for a few years in college.
Yes.
So I have like what some I would kind of formal thing, but you definitely have like your finger on the pulse of Constantine from the new Muppet movie. Like, I feel like you have a very, you know, this. I have like the nerd pie of movies. You have a strong geek slice of nerd movie of movies. This is
the problem. My parents go see. Here's for the listener. My parents go see every movie. They don't care if it's good or bad. They go see it. They typically like. I always get the rating from them every weekend, and they go to at least two a weekend. I always get the rating. It's typically a 6 or 7. Doesn't matter on the movie. It's just their attention was held for 2 hours. That was all they needed. They had their giant popcorn, their giant soda. They'll go see anything. So I grew up on that. I grew up going to see everything. And then when I hit college, I like refined it a little bit. I went back, I watched the AFH, like the 100 movies of the 20th century, and I kind of caught up and I got out of the bad movie thing.
Right.
But every now and again, I still love a Triple X. I still love anything with Vin Diesel in it.
God, the original Triple X is such a good movie.
It's so, and love like, it. The start where he's in the sports car that he's stolen and the cops can't catch him and can't apparently look up his address despite the fact that he posts on the web like, look at me stealing this car and drive it off a bridge and just
– watch the internet.
He goes, don't be a dick, Dick. I can't – it's the best. It's one of my favorite movie lines of all time.
Don't be a dick, Dick. Oh, man. Anything else, dude?
Waterworld is very divisive. I know that anybody, any nerd worth their salt loves Waterworld.
I love Waterworld.
A lot of people think it's a terrible movie.
Oh, come on. But you know what I really love, and this may be too nerdy, is I actually love Waterworld on land, a.k.a. The Postman.
Oh, yes. That is a lot longer.
I fucking love The Postman. I love that movie. It is so weird, and it all takes place in Idaho, which is crazy.
And the villain is, what's that guy's name? Patton? Something Patton?
No, in the movie, it's Colonel Bethlehem.
Yeah, but the actor's name.
Oh, I don't know. It's a dude from Remember the Titans, the assistant coach.
There you go. Got it. Nailed it.
Nailed it. Oh, man, The Postman and Waterworld, both amazing movies.
Yeah.
My
but
God.
Most, have you seen the new Riddick movie? I think it was just, was it just called Riddick?
No, see, that's a little too deep for me.
God, the first 10 or 15 minutes is no dialogue. Mm-hmm. And then they try and like Wally it.
Yeah, it's like Wally.
And then like the first line is like, there are bad days, and then there are legendary bad days. Just, I was enraptured. And I will sit and wait for all of what's the space Marvel movie?
Guardians of the Galaxy?
Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. I will wait all movie for him to say, I am Groot.
Yeah, exactly. I just love that, like, I feel like these are the types of movies that anybody who's ever been in a Dungeons & Dragons game says to themselves, I could make a movie. Like, that's what these movies are.
And he has, I think he foots the bill on the Riddick movies now. I think that was almost entirely out of his own pocket.
Yeah, Vin Diesel, big D&D player, actually.
Yeah.
Trivia.
Oh, also, man. Before I forget, speaking of bad movies, see Conan the Barbarian. Don't watch Conan the Destroyer. Conan the Destroyer is terrible. Okay. Conan the Barbarian is great.
I knew that you were the Conan guy. So which one is like the PG one and which one is the hard R?
Conan the Barbarian is hard R. He's like having sex with this witch and like she just goes berserk. And as a kid, you're like, boobs!
Yeah.
But what happened? Like, you don't really fully grasp the chick freaking out. what was his James Earl Jones is the villain, and he's just like a big creepy snake, but it's not. It's just like good hardcore, what do they call it? Sandals and swords and sandals.
Right.
Darth Vader
is the bad guy.
Yeah, and consequently, still a fantastic bad guy.
Awesome.
And he just does his thousand-yard stare and just mesmerizes people. Conan the Destroyer was like...
Wait a sec. How fucking sad is it that James Earl Jones has now been relegated to Sprint commercials?
Oh, I thought you were going to say why he didn't show up on the cast list for the new Star Wars.
Well, obviously Darth Vader died. Maybe a ghost scene. But
yeah,
no,
he's in there somewhere.
But he's the electronic voice of Anakin Skywalker. Like, even if they brought Anakin back as a ghost man, he wouldn't have that voice. Like, he is just like the voice box. Like, he went to the store He went to this store, and they were like, okay, man, you get these three choices. One of them was, like, surfer dude Matthew McConaughey. The next one was, like, you know, some – it was, like, super high-pitched but also kind of grating on your ears. So it was, like, annoying but at the same time menacing because it was so piercing. And then the third one was James Earl Jones. He's like, I'll take that in a second.
So
sir.
What about this? What if somebody, one of the new Sith, finds Darth Vader's old helmet?
Love it.
And, like, gets the voice box. And they just use James Earl Jones again.
You just made me so excited. You just made me extremely excited because guess what? You're right. James Earl Jones can be in the new trilogy as the voice box of Darth Vader. Immortal.
Or maybe R2-D2 picks up the voice box and starts talking.
Oh, my God. Okay, they install Darth Vader's voice box in R2-D2. Now he speaks full English in James Earl Jones' voice. Oh, my God. But then every time he gets a little excited, he just goes into the butt beeps again. But it's just James Earl Jones going.
Such a range, too, to go from that deep right. voice to the high-pitched beeps.
No, boops. But it's just James Earl Jones going.
He doesn't speak English. He just beeps and boops in James Earl Jones'
tone. Oh, my God. This is amazing. Why don't they do it?
How do we get this as a ringtone? How do we convince James Earl Jones? Can we call him?
Well, he's doing fucking
Sprint
commercials, dude. So apparently he's up for anything. Anyway, so you were talking. And then what is Conan? Which one? Conan the Destroyer? Is that the PG one?
Conan the Destroyer is like if Joss Whedon wrote a Conan story. Because it's like everybody's a distinct character, but they all suck and it's not good.
And
I don't think I.
And it's isn't it? I think it's PG, right?
PG or PG-13, which at the time was PG, is PG now to us.
Yeah, but there was no PG-13 at the time Conan the Destroyer was made, I don't think.
Really?
Because I think it was made before Raiders of the Lost Ark. Raiders of the Lost Ark was the first PG-13 movie.
If you want
or no,
Temple of Doom
was.
If you see Conan the Barbarian and you like it, don't watch Conan the Destroyer. Watch Red Sonja.
There you go.
Which has Arnold in it as a he's like a king, and you know at the end of Conan the Barbarian they insinuate that he's a king, but of course it's more about a this evil lesbian sorceress. It's fantastic.
You
in a bad sense.
You just proved yourself as bad movie king. Sit on your throne as bad movie king, sir.
Heavy lies the crown.
I love it, dude. All right, well, this is almost becoming a topic, but we got to move on to our topics. Let's do a little tiny minute roll off here.
All right, I got my D20 this week.
Okay, good. We're just going to roll 20-sided dice, see who gets to talk first on the podcast this week. Ooh. Rolled a lucky number 13, baby.
Oh, 10.
Nice.
Middle of the road.
Okay, so for my first topic this week, I am going to talk about movies.
Do you know what nemesis means?
So, we actually got a great Facebook roundup question this week, and I want to address it. Not only was this so good, I realize now this was not on the Facebook roundup, this was a Gmail. He Gmailed us. Matt Jamailed us and sent in this awesome Star Wars question to our Gmail, personalargots@gmail.com. Also, if you want to give us a call, 360-362-0024. I always forget to do that after people call in. But that's how you get
most likely to go to the phones.
Yes, exactly. So Matt gave us an email this week. He says, last week there was a lot of Star Wars talk. This week, Disney confirmed that there will be three spin-off movies, and there is a lot of talk about what they will be. As previously rumored, the origin stories of Yoda, Han Solo, and Boba Fett are all options, but none of that is confirmed for sure. So my question is to you, which I hope can be answered in the classic personal arrogance way, what would be the three most ridiculous origin stories we could see from Star Wars with details of what they could consist of? That is Matt from CSW. I don't know what CSW means. Is that like California Southwest?
Colorado State Washington?
Mm-hmm, probably. So, obviously, we've already covered the fact that R2-D2 needs Darth Vader's voice box installed in him.
Yeah.
That has to happen immediately. But that should be in episode 7.
Yeah. Yeah, that's more main yeah. canon. Because they are. The robots are the main.
I can't even... Dude, I can't tell you how much my mind was blown at that thought. Like, my mind exploded at that thought of Darth Vader... Of finally R2-D2 being able to speak in Darth Vader's voice.
What are his first words?
His first words, this is perfect. His first words need to be, yes!
I definitely thought you were going to go for like some sort of swear at C-3PO.
No, Darth Vader needs to be no, and R2-D2 is yes.
Perfect. Absolutely.
Anyway.
Bringing it around. So who's your top, who do you want to hear the background of?
Okay,
just consider backgrounds yeah, first.
And I believe we covered this at some point. This was like way back when Disney bought Lucasfilm. And I believe the one that we talked there, which I think is my number one, is a Max Rebo story. You know who Max Rebo is?
He's the security guard, right?
No.
Is this the ice cream guy?
Ice cream guy? Made out of ice cream? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, there's like a... It might be a deep cut.
That's a deep
Star
cut.
Star Wars jokes. Anyways, who's Max Rebo?
Max Rebo is the elephant man who plays the keyboard at Jabba's palace. He's blue.
Oh, yeah, I got you.
Ooh, mow, make it ooh, mow, mow, make it ooh, mow, mow, ooh, mow, mow. Max Rebo, the Elephant Man. And the reason why this is so good is because Max Rebo is a musician on Tatooine. Now, Tatooine is a planet that has cities few and far between. And you know that Mos Eisley is definitely... within the region of Jabba's palace, because Jabba has no problem traveling there to track down Han Solo in A New Hope.
And he doesn't go far.
He doesn't travel a long distance. Apparently, he's also very close to Mos Espa because he starts the pod race there in episode 1.
I assumed that was a different hut.
No, that's Jabba. That's like a young, strapping Jabba the Hutt. But that was back when he would move around a little bit. This is like old Godfather, Jabba the Hutt.
Gotcha.
In Return of the Jedi. Anyway, but you know that you got to know that the cantina is close to Jabba's palace. It's within distance of Jabba's palace, right? I mean, at the beginning of Return of the Jedi, R2-D2 and C-3PO literally walk there. Like,
yes, I was about to point out the fact that you can space travel around the planet.
Right.
So maybe things are really close, but yes, you're right. They walked, although they're robots, yep. So who knows how long they were walking. It doesn't really, they don't really have to stop.
That's true. They walked a really long distance in A New Hope, too. What's the escape pod landed there? God, I love Oh my God, I just love Star Wars so much. I just love it so much. All I'm saying is that Max Rebo definitely knows Figure and Dan and the Cantina Band.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're musicians, and they're all hanging out in the same places. I mean, we're talking open mic nights. We're talking, you know, gigs together. We're talking weird parties that they both played at. Like, Max Rebo, I want to see a Max Rebo Figrin Dan origin story where they're musicians traveling Tatooine and getting into hijinks while playing music. It is a musical Star Wars show that actually makes sense. Max Rebo and Figrin Dan. Rockin' Tatooine.
Could it be like a How I Met Your Band kind of story? Now that How I Met Your Mother is done.
Well, you know, it's got to start off with like Max and Figrin have to be rivals. And then over time they become friends. They realize that their similarities are stronger than their differences. And then they become friends, join a band. Then it's like a rockin' band road trip story across Tatooine, and then it just all gets too much, man. And then Max Rebo's like, I can't do it anymore, but he's the talent. Figrin needs to hold on to him. Figrin may be the technical master, but Max Rebo is the front man. Like, he's got the mad key skills.
We could see the whole, what is the circuit that you play?
Mm-hmm.
And we could see that in the Star Wars universe. Where do you start? Maybe it's you start on Tatooine and mm-hmm. you end on Tatooine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love it because you got to also think that something like the Empire would have a Ministry of Culture, which would have a clamp down on any artistic endeavors that are pursued by members of the Empire. You don't want anything going out of whack and artistically separating people from the Empire, especially when there's this rebellion springing up. Tatooine is the perfect place for musicians and artists to be outside of that shadow of the Empire and independently produce art for each other. So basically, Tatooine is the Portland of the Star Wars universe.
Love it.
This literally writes itself, guys. Max Rebo, Figure and Dan, rockin' Tatooine.
Yeah, I don't know why it's taken them so long to start kicking these movies out. We should have had one 3 months ago.
Who can you think of as like a weird origin story? A ridiculous origin story in the Star Wars universe?
I want to back up real quick because I'm not crazy. The ice cream guy is a thing. His name is Wilro Hood.
Okay.
And he was on Cloud City when the Empire invades. And he takes like some computer memory core and ditches it so that because it has like a bunch of rebel information on it. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out where he shows up, whether it's in like the card game or something. But no, it looks like he's holding an ice cream maker. Like
He is in the movie.
Is he? He just runs through the background?
I did a Google search of Wilro Hood, and it's got him running through Cloud City holding an ice cream maker.
Yep. So that is what computer memory will look like in the future.
This is wonderful.
Contrary to popular belief, it gets bigger.
Dude, he's literally holding a 5-gallon bucket with, like, a plastic hubcap on the top of it.
I'm just glad that I'm not entirely crazy in my referencing him.
Wilro Hood, I love it. Like, where does this guy come from?
But that's not – I don't care about him and his ice cream maker. The background story I would love to see is the Rebel fleet.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, naturally, you follow mostly Admiral Ackbar.
Dude, Ackbar origin would be – the sickest thing ever.
Well, I think, like, you know, we give him a lot of credit as a character for his line, but, like, where did the Rebel fleet start? Like, who kicked that off? Who built, you know, it's mostly Carillion ships.
Yeah.
You know, they have this rendezvous in the middle of space. Like, you could do a sweet, like, the birth of the fleet. Like, who was the first ship? And where do all the other ones come from as they kind of move throughout the, because they have to play this cat and mouse game with the Imperial fleet.
Apparently there's a new animated series called Star Wars Rebels. And I think that might cover it. It's from the same people who did Star Wars Clone Wars. And apparently,
which was pretty good.
And apparently it's going to be canon. So this might answer all your questions, but I do love an Admiral Ackbar origin story. I seem to remember him. I read up in his origin once, and it was like his aquatic planet was taken over by the Empire or something, and all his family was killed or something like that. And he was some kind of king, I think, king of the squids.
Whoa.
And that's
great stuff. Like, here's a guy who's been fighting for, what has it been, 20 or 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
To the point of the end of 3.
Right.
You know, how, if he's been really in it since the beginning, like, and he's hard. I mean, you're almost talking like he's lost everything.
Well, he's
pretty
soft. He's pretty soft, dude. He's spongy.
He's a spongy soft on the outside, but he's hard on the inside.
Yeah, he's got an endoskeleton. What do you expect?
So,
hey, man, he's like an actual squid. He's got one bone. It's called the pen, and it runs up his spine, and then that's it.
Man, you really remember your childhood.
I fucking know my cephalopod, sir. I am a cephalopodist, sir. He's been fighting for 30 years. I also love the idea of a king turned admiral.
Yeah.
Right? And it like harkens back to
a cause. Like,
yeah,
before, as a king, like, your cause is at best your people.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's something more.
It is your people still. But it's your people against a greater evil. And I love the idea. Like, it's a medieval concept of, like, the king slash general, right? Leading the charge into battle. I love it.
Well, and you get to explore, like, you can use it to explore the concept of fighting in space and what is naval battle when you reach that peak. Because that's a very, I think, deep trough for science fiction is how will it be to fight in space like that? You know, conventional tactics won't work, but we still label it that way. We still consider it a navy. We still consider the concept of, you know, but you add the concept of battleships versus fighers, you know, that's that grand scale that occurs.
Yeah, they're not generals. They are admirals, right? You know,
and then you add in traveling at light speed and.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love some Akbar, man. I love some Akbar. What was one more? Oh, of course, Wedge. I mean, Wedge Antilles is a great guy. Love to see Wedge Antilles' origin story.
Don't they have like the whole Rogue Squadron books or something?
Yeah, but apparently now all the books are no longer canon.
Oh shit!
Yeah, so they now
like
have the
Pluto,
Star.
They were thrown out.
Well, they exactly like they have the Star Wars universe, but now they have the Star Wars Legendary universe. The Star Wars Legendary universe includes all of the books that have been written up until the point that Disney bought Star Wars, and now the Star Wars canon is episode 1, 2, and 3, Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, episode 4, 5, and 6, and now whatever else comes out of all these movies from Disney.
Well, now they're doing comic books, so eventually they can just do that thing that the comics books loves to do, and they have the big apocalyptic rewrite every so often, and we get to start over. And we can literally wipe away the first three movies and say, nope. Not a thing.
I think I have my idea for the third most ridiculous origin story.
All right.
And this one, you got to bear with me a little bit because we are going most ridiculous. I think that the third most ridiculous origin story has got to be the origin of the Sarlacc monster. And basically what it is a series of one acts with the Sarlacc conversing with whoever it has just ingested. So Boba Fett makes a cameo appearance. It's just a series of like people, and the Sarlacc is like, "Hey, so like, how'd you piss off Jabba?" And then
does he have mouths in his throat? Like, are you being digested? And he's like harassing you the whole way down.
I like to think of the Sarlacc as a cephalopod because he does have tentacles, and I also like to think that he has some kind of telekinesis. What do you call it when you can like talk with somebody with, you know?
Oh, he's like that psychic.
You know what I'm talking. He brain talks. Yeah, telepathy. There you go. Thank you.
Telepathic.
Yeah, he's telepathic, so he can telepathically speak with his victims while he digests them. Because he's lonely. I mean, he's a dude in a pit.
But we've got to go back to the original Sarlacc, where nothing came but tentacles came out.
Right.
And it was just a hole in the ground.
Oh yeah, you're right. There was a mouth. There was like a mouth in the
when they redid them.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's just like the teeth and then a couple tentacles.
So it's really kind of like an interview show.
Exactly.
You could do it like
it's a series of one acts about
just be.
It's a series of one acts about people who have been ingested by the Sarlacc at the hand of Jabba. So these guys have got to be like underworld scumbags. For
I don't
dealing
think
with
Jabba just sticks to underworld scumbags. I'm pretty sure he's throwing a nice politician in there every now and again.
No. Yeah, but an underworld scumbag politician. Like, Luke Skywalker was the best person that Jabba ever caught. And the reason why you know that is because he killed everybody that Jabba had with a lightsaber. Like, he was not expecting that. He was expecting a bunch of scumbags, like, half high. Goons that he could throw into this Sarlacc pit. So this is just like a bunch of goons, just like going through their life story, thinking about how they got to this point in their lives where they got betrayed by Jabba, thrown in the Sarlacc pit, and reinvesting themselves, trying to redeem themselves before they are ultimately digested by the Sarlacc. And the last one is Boba Fett, and then he has some kind of great realization, some kind of some kind of catharsis. And at that moment, his jetpack shoots off. And unexpectedly, once again, I like to think that he has some kind of beautiful catharsis that's so beautiful that the Sarlacc bumps his jetpack with one of his tentacles and then he shoots out of the Sarlacc pit.
Or maybe he's mildly force attuned, Boba Fett. You know, he is, it's a natural defense mechanism that he sets off his own jetpack.
Now, sir, Boba Fett cannot be force attuned.
Why not?
Because he is a clone of Jango Fett. And so are all of the stormtroopers. And therefore, then both Jango Fett and all the stormtroopers would also be force attuned because they would have the genetic midichlorians in order to be Jedi. This is why the original prequels suck.
But you're assuming
this is why it's all bullshit.
You're assuming that the cloning process is perfect. What if there was a defect in the cloning process and he is the one mistake?
Well, that makes sense because apparently stormtroopers don't have free will, which means that maybe the Force or the midichlorians are attached to free will. By the way, yeah, all of this shit is bull. It just pisses me off so much that the prequels are like, oh yeah, Chewbacca totally knew Yoda. And then, like, what? Like, Chewbacca knew Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then he sees him in the Mos Eisley Cantina, and he's like, oh, I totally forgot who you were. Oh, you're that guy. You're that Jedi, along with all the other Jedi that he interacted with during the Clone Wars. But I still don't believe in all this bullshit that you're spewing. Like, I just hate that they turned Chewbacca from a benevolent, lovely, gentle giant into a complete fucking idiot because he can't remember people that he met immediately like 30 years ago in a war George situation.
George Lucas is a bad DM. He loves his characters and he cannot kill them and he ultimately overpowers them.
Also crazy that Darth Vader made C-3PO.
Yep.
Just designed
him. Didn't remember that. C-3PO didn't remember that.
Well, that makes more sense because their memory can be wiped. But come on, it's a fucking Wookiee, dude.
Yeah, but a memory wipe is such a lame excuse.
Hey, I'm going to wipe the memory of my droid right now.
Whoop, whoop.
Literally on my Android phone. Done. Done and done, sir. Anyway, I love this stuff, dude. If anybody else here has any origin stories they want to hear or they want Jesse and I to spew about, maybe in next week's show, please send them to us, personalarrogance@gmail.com. Your ridiculous Star Wars origin story. Just give us a character, and we'll fill out the rest.
Star Arrogance.
I love it. Levi, what is your first topic?
Oh, man, I want to talk about some games.
Here we go.
So, I want to talk to you about Destiny, because I know this is a game you're pumped for.
I don't know, man.
Really? You've turned.
No, so it's not that I'm not pumped for it. It's just like, I feel like to have fun with it, you got to be a next-gen guy, and I don't know, I'm turning 30 in like 2 years, and in like a year and a half.
Jeez.
You're turning 30 in a year and a half and a week earlier than me. So I'm just like, I got to reassess a little bit. I just don't know if like I'm going to be a console gamer. And I know it's going to be on PC, but I don't know if I'm going to be a first-person gamer. Maybe it's time to move on. Maybe you need to talk me off the ledge here. Because Destiny looks like an amazing game. I'm watching the dev diaries. I follow this shit. But I don't know if I have the time or the passion to invest in this game as much as I did in like every Halo game that came out before it. So tell me about this, dude. Tell me about
this. I don't know that I'm going to talk you off the ledge. Maybe we can jump together. That's kind of what I'm thinking. So I have not been swayed by anything I've seen from Destiny. When they said nothing, I was stoked because it's a Bungie game. Like it's Bungie's no longer doing Halo, they switched to Destiny. It's like, oh, sweet, they're going to do whatever they want. Activision has sunk $500 million into this project, which is what they spent on Avatar, right?
I guess so. Yeah.
Something around there.
Yeah, but Avatar wasn't $60 a ticket. It was close, but it was not $60 a ticket.
They tried to get it up there with the 3D.
Yeah.
So they've put a ton of time into this. Activision has agreed to like a 10-year publishing deal. They're going to make, I think they're guaranteed 3 games over the course of the 10 years. They got 500 people working on it. Halo Reach had 150. You know, I've just been following this story since I use air quotes for this, but the embargo was raised last Monday. And so this was on my list of potential topics last week.
Embargo? What kind of embargo?
They had everybody fly out to Bellevue, and they were going to show, like, the game. It was going to be a big deal because they've been pretty quiet about it. You really have not seen a lot of, or according to them, a lot of the game in terms up to this point. And there's still a big reveal coming at E3. That's supposedly when people are going to be able to get more hands-on with the thing. But I had a buddy at my game store. I was kind of poo-pooing that. I was telling him I was not interested. He goes, "Oh man, wait until Monday. Embargo lifts." So I wait until Monday, and I saw nothing new.
Well, I watched the Polygon, because you know I'm a Polygon follower. Polygon.com. It's like the best place for video game news. But they had a guy there, and they did a video report of it, and basically they were like, yeah, they let me play one level. Like, it's literally just a bunch of stuff I've seen already. But from everything that comes out of Destiny, it kind of seems like the thrill and the pull of Destiny is not in a mission, not in a multiplayer scenario like you would be with Halo. But the real pull of Destiny is in the more epic story of Destiny. They basically wanted to take something like that multiplayer that they made famous, that first-person shooter multiplayer that Halo revolutionized on a console, and they want to add MMO elements of it to it so that you're not just going from match to match to match to match trying to figure out how to kill the most, how to have the best KD ratio in each game. You're literally building a character over time that has unique attributes based on the epic story that you've been telling through this first person shooter over time. I think that's what Destiny's trying to be. And I don't know if it seems like they shortchanged these reporters by only letting them play a very small portion of the game. But I'm still holding out hope. I think I might have more hope for this than you. Maybe I need to tuck you off the ledge here.
The problem is that they kept saying this game is awesome, and you haven't seen the awesome parts yet. That has been kind of the the PR campaign since they first talk about it. They're like, oh, just you wait. Am I going to have to wait until till launch day before I'm really sold on it? Because right now, I watch the videos. It looks like Halo. One of the if you read, I was reading through, the enemy types, the Hive or zombie like. Cabal or tank-like, Fallen are multi-armed. The Fallen sound like the Vectors. What were they in the last Halo?
The Halo 4 guys.
New guys. The Cabal look like the Covenant. The heavies from the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Hive, that sounds an awful lot like the Horde, the Swarm.
Yeah.
Was it the Flood?
The Flood. Yeah.
I mean, there's talent. So those elements aren't new. The guns, they have a gun system that seems similar to Borderlands.
Yeah. So that's another thing is that this is something they're toting, is that they have a lot more guns, which is cool. I mean, that's one of my favorite things about Borderlands is progressively going through gun after gun after gun after gun until you find your standby gun. That's a really cool thing to do as a player character in the Borderlands universe. I think that could be even cooler in something that's a little more refined from a first-person shooter perspective as something that's been... I mean, this is going to be a beautiful it's going to be a beautiful, well-controlled first-person shooter if it's nothing else. I mean, that's what Halo, that's what Bungie does, is create really playable first-person shooter games. Like, I haven't felt the need, I'm not a Call of Duty guy, but I haven't felt the need to go to Call of Duty because Halo has, I don't have any reason to go away from Halo. I mean, Halo has a great combat system, a great first-person shooter combat system that I don't need to go away from. So, at the very least, Destiny's going to give you that.
It will. So, there's that. And the other, my other concern is, so there's the combat perspective. It's more Halo, which is fine, but that's not, I certainly don't think $500 million is really worth a good combat system. I mean, all of the Halos, or at least originally, you know, they tried to add something. They tried to refine at the very least. You know, the first one was a first-person shooter with vehicles, which is honestly our favorite part, is getting in a Warthog and dying gloriously.
Well, my favorite part of Halo is sticking somebody with a sticky grenade. And then,
and your
probably,
kill-death ratio reflects that.
Well, yeah, but no, but it's wonderful. Sticking somebody with a sticky grenade is like the best feeling in Halo, especially if they kill you and then they die immediately after they kill you because you killed them after. Like, the after-death kill is like the greatest thing in Halo. It's awesome.
My concern is that it's just, and then they, you know, they're throwing on like this MMO stuff where, have you seen what do they call it? The events?
So from what I understand is that as you go through the different planets, you will enter different areas. And if those areas are occupied by other players in the game at the same time concurrently, then they will become part of the world that you are in. So you could easily stumble upon a world full of actual player characters, having an encounter in the same world that you're having it, but you can malleably go in and out of those scenarios as you explore the planet that you're on. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. So those are what I'm talking about. And my concern is that I don't care about other people. When did that, like, I don't know. I understand that World of Warcraft made a ton of money. It was really, you know, unique in the sense of how many people have brought in the scope. And I know there were other MMOs at the time, but it really kind of piqued that interest, especially for myself. I don't want to play with 100 people anymore. I want to play with like 4 people that I like that I'm not going to mute. And I want to bring something big down that way. Telling me that I can join a battle with 100 people, like, is not interesting, especially when, you know, the class, 3 classes, 3 races, none of which I really see the difference in yet. You have a special maneuver, but I don't know how that's any different from armor lock or armor power kind of situations. You know, they're not really like a finesse thing. It's just I use my gun and, oh, my thing, my ability is charged and I hit it again. And seeing 100 people do that at the same time is not like calling me. I'd rather that hardware be spent on a world where me and four, a planet where me and 4 friends can roll around, and you know what, if we're in the same area, then like, let's jam, let's really tackle the big, you know, like Borderlands initial, one of the things that they attempted, and I don't think they did not succeed at it, was the scale of enemies.
Definitely did not have. I mean, because like, yeah, they didn't have scalable enemies based on your level. So like, if you
but
got too good,
scale in terms of size. I'm talking. Oh, like, yeah. There's okay. One boss that is a giant thing that has a bunch of birds spun off of it.
Those
but
are not
spurs,
really those are
like,
racks, dude. They are racks. They are like racks, bat thanks. Lizards. So. Okay. No, but another. But this is something that I think got lost in Borderlands 2, is it, and I don't know if it did or not, but like I played Borderlands 2 as a single player guy. But in Borderlands was not only did it have a bunch of guns, but it also had co-op. Like the co-op play in Borderlands was so emphasized and really, really good when you teamed up with somebody online and got together and did co-op. And like that was just amazing.
And you pick separate classes, you know, you didn't want to play
distinct
with your friends the same. You wanted your healing, shoot me to heal me. Like that was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And you can't, That's not going to happen with 100 people in a first-person shooter. It kind of works in Halo, World of Warcraft raids. You know, the management of the clerics and the wizard. I mean, the DPS of rogues, like that stuff. There's a math game occurring there that I think people really were able to kind of work with and mold. Mm-hmm. But I don't see that happening with this.
Well, but I think that you're kind of over-exaggerating with 100 people. I don't think you're going to be running into parties of 100 people all the time.
No, you're going to be running into a room randomly with 16 people to shoot a computer, and that doesn't sound...
Yeah, but I don't know if all those 16 people... See, because this is the thing. I'm going to have to pull the bullshit level here a little bit here, buddy, because when you play Halo, you're completely always playing with the idea of playing against random strangers. Because, like, you're not playing... We're not getting together and playing through the campaign. We're getting together to go shoot some random strangers in a team battle. So I don't know. The question there is that, and from what I understand, and if they're smart, this is what they would do, because people play Halo now to play multiplayer. I mean, the campaigns are one thing. They're fun to get online, play with four buddies, play through the campaign. It's great. But most people are getting on to play in a multiplayer battle. And if they can have that multiplayer battle element, but it's more of a malleable, you can go into a place and pick your side and have your adventure that way, I think that actually has some appeal to me. I don't think that we're going to be flying into 100-person battles all the time.
My dream would be, and I really want to convince you to play Titanfall at some point, even if you go to like a Redbox and rent it, because I think they're onto a better mechanic in terms of the future of first-person shooters. Because the reason I avoid Call of Duty is because I turn around and I get shot, and I turn around and I get shot, and then I turn around and get shot.
My experience with Call of Duty is it's one-shot kills basically all the time.
Yeah, and I rarely get the chance. I can't even identify my attacker. And that's the reason I go sort of to the Halo side, is because with the shield and then the regular bullet mechanic, like there's just you buy yourself a little bit of time to react.
Right.
Titanfall, you can still die to one hit from somebody who knows what they're doing, but the scale, it's fewer people, which means that you're less likely to get killed right off the bat. It's a lot harder to hit people because of the maneuvering mechanics. And I know how much you love to evade.
What appeals to me about Titanfall is that it seems like it's a game that beginners and experts can all play in the single map. Because your beginners are basically going to sit around until the Titan's ready. They're going to wait for that thing to drop. They're going to be a tank, and they're going to roll through, kill some people, have a great time, die probably pretty quickly, but still have an amazing experience. Even if they're not good at the game, they're going to have an amazing experience. Like, it caters to a wide range of people. Whereas Halo and Call of Duty have both over time become expert games. It's like, if you're not good, you're going to go in there, you're going to get slaughtered in both of those games. And I feel like Titanfall, from what I understand, and from the gameplay videos that I've watched about it, is that it's more of an experience that a wide range of skill levels can play and still have a great time doing it.
Well, what Titanfall adds is something that hasn't been in games since, I think, or hasn't been common in the first person arena since Perfect Dark, and that's bots. Like, that's what makes Titanfall enjoyable for all levels, because if it's 6-on-6 and the maps are good, are a good scale, you know, because they got to allow the room for the giant effing robots to just roll through. But when you're running around, there's shit to shoot, and it's not just people, so you feel more success. The reward mechanism is more frequent. And it fills in that time between dying to other players. So what's really nice is I can start off the match. I do some wall jumping. I try and get into a good position. You know, there's plenty of stuff to hide behind and jump behind. And I was surprised the burn card mechanic is actually really enjoyable. And that's where you get 3 cards per match, and you get like packs of cards, every so often. And you can basically, like, every death, when you spawn, you can play like fast Titan spawn, and your Titan will just be ready when you come out of that spawn. Or one of them is I'm trying to think of what the name of it was, but it was like Grenade Frenzy, and it was unlimited grenades for that lifespan.
Wow.
I didn't have an anti-Titan weapon, but I could just throw grenades like a madman. You know, and I was one of those ones where I was like, that's silly, but it fills the time between matches because I'm going through, I'm tweaking my customization for my pilots and my Titan, and then, you know, and there's, you know, 2 minutes between a match, and then I'm going in and setting up my burn cards. I'm like, all right, so how is this, how am I going to play out this match? Like, am I just going to want amped up guns? But what's nice is that there is, are things going on. And I hope this is the, my preferred future for first person shooters is that we refine the amount of players. So it's not about having the most players and we enliven the environments more. I mean, the scarab
NPCs are very interesting to me. And I think that this is a very interesting time that we're living in because you have Respawn Entertainment creating Titanfall. Titanfall has been an unmitigated success, even though it's an Xbox exclusive. In that it has created it has reinvented the first person shooter genre into something that is exciting and new and fresh, even though it is built by the guys who worked at Infinity Ward on the Call of Duty Modern Warfare series, which is the series that redefined Call of Duty from a World War II shooter into what it is today. So it's the people who basically made Call of Duty in their new game. And then you also have the people who made Halo, and they're doing their new game, and that new game is Destiny. So we're living in this time where the people who created these amazing experiences, these revolutionized the first-person shooter on the console, I would say that Bungie did it with the original, you know, Xbox console cycle, and then Call of Duty reinvented that on the new console cycle of, we're talking PS3s and Xbox 360s. But this is the next generation of that. And those old franchises are basically played out. Nobody is super excited about Halo 5, but people are very excited about Destiny, and nobody's super excited about Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, I don't think. I think that's kind of played out at this point, but people love Titanfall. So we're in this new area where we're pushing forward into these next-gen games.
And they're iterating again. They're finally taking and tweaking the mechanics. And my hope is that we get... And, you know, the hardware is really like... In all honesty, Destiny can run... If that's a 360 game. It's going to be able to run on the 360. Mm. Same with Titanfall. I want to see what happens when they tell the old generation to take a hike and they really put some horsepower behind it. We'll see what happens.
The other part about this suit is that Destiny, I think they're biding their time a little bit here because, there's Media Day. Now, then there's E3. And then there's Gamescom. And then there's PAX. And then, you know, like, they're getting... The convention season is quickly approaching. And I feel like there's going to be plenty of Destiny stuff coming out over the summer. They need to save a little bit for getting people excited at each of these conventions. So
that will be a line we will not be standing in at PAX.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I get my media badge so I can go. Hopefully I get my media badge so I can go check it out. Pre-game. Anyway. Doing it for you guys, the fans. And Jesse, Levi, let's move on to trivia here. We are going to be doing Genius One of Trivial Pursuit. I'm going to be rolling a six-sided dice, see which category.
Keep the streak alive.
Oh, you got to keep the streak alive, buddy. It is a five. It is science and nature. Are you ready, buddy?
Nope. These are not my best.
All right, here we go. Levi, what is the oldest, most numerous class of animals?
Class. I'm trying to think of how far up the tree that is, or down the branch. I don't remember. Let's go with the bird?
Kingdom, phylum, family, class? I think it's class, family. I'm going to go with invertebrates. Insects. Oh my god. Come on.
That's not an animal.
Technically, yes, it is an animal. It's definitely an animal, by the way.
Garbage. It's a bug.
If a lobster is an animal, then an ant is an animal. A lobster is basically a giant insect.
A lobster's a freak of nature.
And they're cold, but 23.5 degrees south of the North Pole. I'm going to have to go with a magnetic 3.5 degrees south of the North Pole.
23 degrees. The Tropic of Cancer.
It is. Oh, the Arctic Circle. Jesus Christ.
We're on a roll.
Wow.
Oh,
I hope
man.
If you're playing along at home,
I
you are.
Gone for that.
I hope if you're playing along at home, you're 2-for-2 because we are a couple of dumb idiots.
I thought the Arctic Circle was more based on topography.
Whatever, dude. No, absolutely, it is not. It is a circle.
I thought that was like a metaphorical circle.
Oh man, why am I not sweeping the floor with you? All right, Levi, this one is for you. What is the study of fossils called?
Archaeology.
I'm gonna go with paleontology. It is paleontology. Woo! My first wannabe career was paleontologist. This one's for me. Levi, you need the steel to win. Please play along at home. What is a pyrotechnic display? I'm going to go with a volcano.
I'm going with fireworks.
Oh, my God. You got it, you piece of shit.
Boom.
You got it. Up. Oh, my God. Are you serious?
Technic. Pyrotechnic.
God damn it. Yeah, it would be pyroclastic display, Eric. Well, I don't need to justify that at all because I'm obviously a dum-dum for all of science and nature to Levi, which means that it's time for a geography tiebreaker question. Levi, why don't you explain how this works to the people at home?
Eric's gonna pull a geography question, and whoever's geographically closest wins.
Here we go. What is the... Oh, God. We've had this one 700 times. It is, what is the wettest state in the U.S.? I need new questions. All right. Here we go. Oh, this will be interesting, Levi. What is the capital of Nevada?
Reno?
Yes! Sir, I believe it is Carson City.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it is Carson City.
I didn't have time to do that whole song. The Animaniacs.
Oh, God. There was a point where I memorized every capital in the Union, and that point was in college.
Liz still has it memorized, but as a fifth grade teacher, you have to. So
I guess so. How about South Dakota?
Bismarck?
That's North Dakota. Pierre, sir. Pierre, South Dakota. All right. Well, I win everything this week. Way to flip the tables.
Congratulations.
I love it. I'm like the Mariners playing the A's. We're just going to turn this shit around and take first place, mofos. anyway.
1-1, you got to bring me back on to settle it.
Well, speaking of baseball, sir, I guess I don't really have a ring and I don't have a song for this one, but I'm going to talk about fucking baseball because Jesse isn't here. And to all of you who are like, oh my God, I hate baseball, just like Jesse. I know some people hate baseball. I know some people think it's boring, and I can understand why they would think it was boring, because they don't understand how beautiful and wonderful it is. But I'm not actually going to talk about baseball statistics, standings, players, none of that, rules, none of that stuff. What I am going to talk about is a very interesting web algorithm that I found, and it comes first from slate.com, and it is a very interesting website that allows you to create and plan a road trip to visit 30 ballparks in 30 days.
Yikes.
So apparently this is a experience that a couple writers at slate.com decided to take last year, and apparently it was terrible. Because if you want to travel around and visit 30 major league stadiums in 30 days, it is a slog of slogs. Like it is a terrible, terrible experience. Because the problem is that Major League Baseball, I'm sure they have algorithms that do this now, But they don't schedule the game so that they are like, oh, well, you will have a game in New York, then you'll have another game in New York, then you'll have another game in Boston, then you'll have a game in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, in Washington. Like, they don't organize them that way. They are going all over the place here.
Is this talking about, like, following one team?
No, this is just visiting every Major League Baseball stadium in a 30-day span.
But for a game. There would be a game at each stadium. Isn't there one day off every week?
Well, no. Not for every team. I mean, there's pretty much a game every day.
I thought everybody had Monday off or something.
No. I mean, Monday is a day that doesn't have a lot of games, but there's always at least one game per day, except for the day before and after the All-Star game.
Okay.
So that's the way it works, sir. So I'm going to start this one at Safeco Field. So they have this wonderful thing. If you want to figure out the URL for this, it's www.slate.com/articles/sports/2014/05/baseball_road_trip_how_2_visit_all_30_MLB_stadiums_in_30_days.html. That is the website.
Thank you and good night.
Well, that's all the time we have. So you get to pick your starting stadium here. And I've actually already gone through this algorithm and found the best day to travel, to start my trip to travel to every Major League stadium in 30 days. And I'm beginning my trip here in Seattle, Washington, of course. And I'm going to be taking this trip around the nation. And it's a really wonderful thing because it only takes about 10 seconds to load the entire thing. So if you want to start your trip in Seattle, Washington, the best day to do it is July 23rd. You will travel in those 30 days. So, you know the country's like 3,000 miles across. Levi, how many miles do you think you'd have to travel in 30 days to reach every Major League Baseball stadium and watch a game there?
Oh, let's see. So you've got me on. This is a good cast for me because I've done a lot of road tripping. I drove Rhode Island to Colorado in a almost a cannonball run style. I would guess if you were doing 30 stadiums, 30 days, almost every stadium is going to be in a different state.
Right.
Most state to state trips are anywhere between 300 to 500. 100 miles. So let's say average 300. I think that's a little low, but if you're doing three, that's like 9,000 miles. So let's say 10,000 miles to visit 30 stadiums in 30 days.
So the problem with that is you're not factoring in Major League Baseball scheduling, which is the problem.
Oh, God, are you backtracking? So this is not a straight line.
It is not a straight line whatsoever in any way at all.
At worst, it would have to be like, I mean, if you think about the time to sleep, drive,
so this is assuming you. No, this is assuming you were traveling with a companion and you could sleep in the car.
Oh, that's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, still, like, I would the most I can do is like 600 miles in a day. After that, you just want to get out of the car and roll over. Your
Levi,
head.
You're not going to be able to do this trip, buddy.
How many miles is it?
It is the shortest. Amount of miles that you will travel if you start and end your trip in Seattle is going to be 20.
That's your mistake is starting on the West Coast.
Yeah, it's going to be.
This is an East Coast trip. And
well,
just
also,
don't.
Seattle is the most isolated Major League Baseball city. There's like no Major League Baseball cities within a 12-hour drive of Seattle. So,
how many miles?
21,923 miles. Whoa. And this is the shortest distance. Like, I have seen scenarios that go up to 30,000 miles.
It's assuming you're doing 700 miles a day?
No, in some days you're doing over 1,000.
Oh my God, that's not...
Which is kind of impossible. Like, you have to just drive it straight.
Ugh.
So, the wonderful thing... This is, like, the best thing about this.
Baseball's not worth this.
So, yeah. So, day one, I'm traveling from Seattle to... I'm going to watch the game in Seattle, the New York Mets versus Seattle Mariners. Then I'm going to travel to Los Angeles the next day, which is 24 hours of driving, in my experience. If you want to drive from Seattle to Los Angeles, it is a 24-hour drive. They have me doing that in about 21 hours. So, immediately, That's 1,164 miles of driving on the first day.
You're going to be eating a lot of fast food.
Yeah, very
you're
nice.
You're not going to be able to get out of the car.
Very nice of them, though. The next day, I get 2 days to travel to my next destination.
San Francisco?
No.
San Diego?
It's actually Minneapolis, Minnesota, a distance of 1,926 miles. So I only have to cover 2,000 miles in 2 days to get to Minnesota.
It probably takes you through the route that I took. Because I took a Minnesota detour going from Rhode Island to Colorado.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that once you hit, like, east of Denver, probably 20 miles, there's nothing. It's flat and just you drive off the road trying to do that in 2 days.
So I go to Minnesota. The next trip from – this is insane. So I've already driven from Seattle to Los Angeles to watch the Angels play. Then I traveled from Anaheim to Minneapolis to watch the Twins take on the White Sox. My next day, and I have to do this in 1 day, travel from Minneapolis, Minnesota to Dallas, Texas.
I was going to guess Florida.
No, Dallas, Texas. So that is only 994 miles of driving. So this is the shortest distance that I've driven so far.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going Dallas or Arlington to Denver to see the Rockies. Then,
beautiful stadium.
Yep, and that is only 778. So it's getting shorter here. The next day I'm traveling from Denver to Oakland, California. Or no, to San Francisco, California to watch the Rockies take on the Giants. It's kind of great. I get to follow the Rockies. And literally drive over the Rockies another 1,200 miles to go from Denver to San Francisco. The thing is, this is a front-loaded trip, okay? The next day I get to go down to San Diego. Then I'm going to Los Angeles. This is a beautiful day. 121 miles to drive from San Diego to Los Angeles. This is my respite.
You're back in California. This is insane.
Yeah, no, I'm back in Los Angeles. Then I'm traveling from Los Angeles. Where am I traveling? Oh, up to Oakland. So I'm having a nice leisurely drive, okay? It's great. Then I'm driving out to Phoenix, going to Arizona. That's a nice short jaunt. The next day is Phoenix to Houston, Texas. But I only get 1 day to drive 1,100 miles from Phoenix to Houston, Texas.
Oh, that's Western Texas, which is a desert.
But this is the beautiful part about it, is now I am back in the eastern side of the United States. So now I'm in, like, the zigzag zone, as I call it. So I'm driving from Houston to St. Louis. It's only 700 miles. Once I get to St. Louis, I'm driving to Washington, D.C., another 800 miles. These are all like 1 day trips, dude. Then I'm traveling from Washington to New York, which is actually a nice jaunt. it's not that bad. It's only, how far is it here?
It's gotta be like 8 hours,
200 miles. So that's not bad. That's like four hours,
what?
228 miles. So it's like 4 hours. Once I get into the city, all I gotta do—that's
not accounting for Jersey though, and Jersey will slow you down,
or toll roads, or Chris Christie. but once I get to New York, I have a great day. I've only driven 4 hours, and I get to watch two baseball games. I watch the Mets and the Yankees in 1 day, and then I'm driving from New York to Cleveland, then from Cleveland to Chicago, Chicago to Milwaukee. This is like the short jaunt section. Milwaukee to Cincinnati. That's actually a lot. Like, I could not believe how short of a distance it is from Chicago to Milwaukee. It's like
yeah, that one's
it's 94 miles from Chicago to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It always blows my mind how close these, like, that's way closer. That's like half the distance as it is from Seattle to Portland.
Yeah.
Milwaukee to Chicago. That's insane to me. I'm watching, what are my doubleheaders here? I get to go to Philadelphia and Baltimore on the same day for a doubleheader. And I also, Chicago and Milwaukee is also a doubleheader. So I watch the game in Chicago in the morning, and or actually in the early afternoon, and then after the game drive the 100 miles to Milwaukee to watch the night game with the Brewers there.
What's the time difference between those two games?
they're both Central Time.
No, I mean, but
But what's an afternoon game time?
I'd have 3 hours to travel 99 miles. I can do that.
Oh yeah, that's doable.
Then where am I going? Milwaukee, then Cincinnati, then Kansas City to Chicago, Chicago to Toronto. That's a bit of a jaunt. Plus, you got to deal with customs. But the Canadian customs aren't that bad. The American customs are the bad.
Yeah,
ones.
Coming back in is where you get.
Then Toronto to Philadelphia, Philadelphia to Baltimore, and that's in one day as well. And then Baltimore to Atlanta, Atlanta to Miami, Miami to Tampa. That is the one that is the best one. A lot of these scenarios, I've been seeing them. You have to go to Miami one day, then drive all around, and then come back to Florida for Tampa. Having both of those in the same time span is really good. And then Tampa to Detroit, which is a bit of a jaunt. How far is Tampa to Detroit? 1,100 miles. Detroit to Boston, Boston to Pittsburgh, and then the wonderful, beautiful trip. You do get 2 days, but you got to drive from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to Oakland, California, a distance
of
2,580 miles. You got 2 days to do it. And then
this is why you have those doubleheader days to make these giant leaps.
Yeah. And then once you see the game in Oakland, you just have that nice 12-hour drive from Oakland to Seattle, and you're done.
Real quick, how many teams are there in Major League Baseball?
30 teams. So this is 30 teams in 30
Okay, so you're seeing all of the stadiums.
Yes.
Gotcha. Sorry, I don't think I picked up on that when I was assuming it was not all of them. Wow, and then you drive straight to your nearest asylum or off the nearest cliff.
I can't imagine. So they did this on Slate. You can actually read the article. It's called "I Don't Care If We Never Get Back." You can read that. It's on Slate.com, and it talks about this journey. Basically, like, after the first couple days, you don't enjoy any of it because all it is driving and then going to baseball games, and every baseball stadium ends up looking the same, and every road ends up looking the same, and you're driving thousands of miles a day, and it is the worst ever.
Yeah, so, just stop in Denver. There's a lot to do there. You can go to the Rockies game and then drink for 29 days.
Well, and this is the other thing that, like, they talk about in the article. Like, they drove past the Grand Canyon. They literally saw the exit that said the Grand Canyon is this way, but they couldn't go to it because it was like a 45-minute detour, and they didn't have time to get to the Diamondbacks game if they would have done that. So,
let me tell you, the Grand Canyon is probably better than watching the Diamondbacks play.
Smoking like a true NL West rival. I love where you're coming from, Levi. But I mean, the fact of the matter is I want to take this trip, but I think if I do it, I'm going to do it over an entire summer. Just do
Here's
it over the
suggestion.
Whole summer.
I think we do it, but we wait until Google Cars are driving us around, and then we just play board games. It's board games and baseball for 30 days.
What a beautiful thing.
It would be like the PAX Marathon.
I love it. That's awesome. Board games and baseball and beer. The triple B.
Yeah, because, you know, you can there's a lot of states where you can drink in an RV if you're not in the driver's seat. So if you're in a Google car,
right?
No open containers.
There you
regulations.
Go. No driver. No drunk driver. Anyway, this sounds exhausting, but at some point I want to do it, but not in 30 days.
Yeah.
I'm not going to drive from Pittsburgh to Oakland in 2 days. That is the worst idea I've ever heard of in my life. Like, especially because, you know, early in the trip, you're driving from Denver to San Francisco. That's 1,200 miles because you're going to be weaving around the Rocky Mountains to get there, right?
So the thing is, like, there's so much to see in between. Why would you?
But the thing
Zion.
About that is that, so you're traveling 2,500 miles from Pittsburgh to Oakland in 2 days. You're traveling 1,200 miles from Denver to San Francisco in 1 day, which means that in 1 day you have to travel from Pittsburgh to Denver in 1 day. Fuck that noise. America's huge. That's all I'm trying to say. America is gigantic. Science. It should be a science topic. All right, Levi, what's your Seco Tapo?
I'd like to talk about some entertainment.
I don't have a song for that.
I don't know. I need like a Broadway tune or something.
Sing it, brother.
I know that Jesse's a big fan of Kennedy's like shotgun topics.
I wanted to
coalesce some of the things I've heard throughout the week and see what you got to say about them.
Like it, love it, one more of it.
How about this for our starting topic? Almost Human has been canceled.
Mm.
Did you watch that show?
Mm-mm. Carl Urban and J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
Right?
Supposed to be a good combination.
Is that the, that's the robot one. It's not the one, other one with the dude who's got enhanced, technologically enhanced. That's not it. Yeah, it's the one with, yeah, Carl Urban, right?
It's the same, I don't know. It sounds like you're describing, so it had Carl Urban with
the robot dude.
The other guy. Mm-hmm. Carl Urban has a, like a robot limb, and then he has a cyborg.
Oh, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert, sir.
It's in the first, like, 30 seconds.
Okay.
I watched the opener. I watched the first couple episodes. I ended up stopped watching it because just as a time constraint, I just have all those Bald Move shows I need to keep up on.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was okay. The chemistry between Carl Urban and his cohort, who I should look up, was really good. They were very, very funny together.
Yeah.
The problem is just that the writing was bad. The plot lines weren't particularly good. You know, they were very kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? When they're kind of like, you've seen it already.
Yeah, they're called pedestrian. Or they're called pedestrian, or they're also called procedurals.
Procedural. That's the word I was looking for. Michael Ealy.
When a TV show, like, is basically self-contained episodes that can be played in any order, it's called a procedural.
Gotcha.
And yeah, I posted a link for Gotham, which is coming out this fall on Fox.
Can you describe this to me? Because I didn't watch the length, but I'm curious.
It's basically Jim Gordon coming to Gotham for the first time. But it's not based on Batman Year One. But it's Jim Gordon coming to Gotham for the first time, encountering like kind of what Gotham is. They do have a lot of kids as Gotham villains. So they have young Bruce Wayne, like, right after his parents get killed. Spoiler alert for Batman there.
they also Dark Knight, Batman 1.
Yeah.
Every other
Batman movies. Thing ever. The they have Catwoman, but she's like Catgirl because she's, like, 12. They have Poison Ivy as a child. They have Penguin. He's, like, probably, like, 21. And then they have Edward Nygma, a.k.a. the Riddler. And he also looks like he's an actual scientist at this point, so he's probably, like, 22. Which is weird, because Riddler's, like, not an old man.
Why would they?
So it could be really good, or it could be really bad, but you know me, I just love Batman. So I'm going to watch it. And they have Harvey Bullock, who's basically going to be Jim Gordon's, partner, and I'm excited about it. I want it to be so good. And just having Batman and the Batman universe in it is going to make it incrementally better for me, just because I love Batman so much. So we'll see what happens, but
I feel like this is a Cartoon Network thing, like where they do the, well, it's the kids version and they're all kids.
Yeah, but it's not. It's like they're trying to do the Small World thing.
Adventures in Babysitting with Jim Gordon.
Oh God, come on, please no. Please no. I mean, it was just, I was watching the trailer and like, I'm very excited for it because I'm excited for anything that happens in Gotham. Like, I just love Batman. But like, I was watching through and they're like, before Penguin. And then they show the Penguin Kid. And then they're like, before Catwoman. And then they show the Catgirl. And then they're like, before the Riddler. And then they show like a young, sexy Edward Nygma dude. And then they're like, before Poison Ivy. And then they show like a girl holding a plant. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if I don't know if I want kids to be all of the Gotham villains. But it gives the opportunity to maybe, this is what I'm hoping, it gives the opportunity to expose more obscure Gotham villains like Calendar Man or the Ventriloquist, or maybe some new Gotham villains that have been revealed in the new DC universe since the reboot, like the Court of Owls. Like, there could be some cool things that come out of it. I'm talking my way out of this, aren't I? Maybe I'm not excited.
Can't decide how you're going on this.
I don't know. I just
maybe
wanted
it's like
to
juvenile court. Maybe he's just a parole officer for teens.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just like I don't want it to be bad. And like I said, I love Batman. I love Gotham. I love everything so much about the whole world. And it's a network television show about Gotham City.
Which channel is it coming to?
Fox. So I'm initially very excited about it, but it's like, I don't know. I just want it to work. Just work. The thing I wanted are cameos of the kids as the Batman villains. And then actual new Batman villains, or Batman villains that have been overlooked in video forever, coming in. Like the Calendar Man is a great serial killer in this Batman universe that they could bring in, and has never been covered in any Batman media ever before.
Calendar Man?
Yeah, he basically does crimes based on different days of the year, so I'll have a Valentine's. It's great. It's good.
See, Holiday Man.
I think there actually was a Holiday Man.
Oh my goodness!
But it kind of is like that. But it's good.
Unsold
the
idea.
No, come on. Zodiac Man is the Zodiac Killer. Had his shtick. This could be. And by shtick, I mean he killed a lot of people.
He was murdering people. Actual serial killer.
Oh god. I'm gonna just stop talking now.
We couldn't catch him, so we made Dirty Harry to feel better.
I'm just done speaking.
All right. Well, let's jump to our here. You can speak about this Power Rangers movie.
So, were you a Power Rangers kid?
Yes.
That's something
I don't want to admit to.
I went to the only elementary school in the country, apparently, where liking the Power Rangers was bullshit.
What?
Yeah, nobody at my elementary school liked the Power Rangers. Liking the Power Rangers was the worst thing that you could be. There was one kid in the school who liked the Power Rangers, and it wasn't very good for that guy.
What about the Pokemon show?
Pokemon's fine, dude.
You guys go for that?
No, Pokemon's great. Okay. Pokemon's great.
I was
great.
Just curious. I remember them being about the same time. That was the time period where I started to become aware of, I am watching a child's show, and I don't want to. But yeah, new Power Rangers movie by Lionsgate, who has handled the Hunger Games pretty darn well.
Yeah, ever since Lionsgate moved out of Vancouver, they've been knocking out of the park. I also they're coming out with this TMNT movie, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, that is on my list here.
All I put as
a note was Ninja Turtles, creepy.
Well, just everything that we loved as children doesn't need to become a dark, gritty movie now. And I would love it if they just made Power Rangers a fucking fun jaunt. Because the one thing that I did so it was not cool to like the Power Rangers TV show when I was a kid. But the Power Rangers movie, I loved that. That was a great movie when I was a kid. Because it was a really fun jaunt. It was a self-contained story, and it actually had, real effects.
Do you remember the story?
No.
Okay. Because I saw MTV had listed, a potential cast, and they were showing characters from that show that I did not remember.
Oh, I remember the character, because it was so... Because, the original Power Rangers, the reason why that whole thing came about is it was a Japanese show. I don't remember what it was called. But they basically just took all of the fight scenes from that show and then intercut them with American people doing the non-fight scenes. That's what Power Rangers was. So
it's all about getting in your robot and kicking some ass.
Yeah. So all of the getting into your robot and your costume and kicking ass, that was all just directly stolen from a Japanese show. And then everything that wasn't that, of them being in high school and hanging out at a clubhouse, or I don't know, I didn't watch the fucking thing. But everything that wasn't that was a bunch of American kids on a soundstage recording that stuff, and then they would intercut it with the Japanese show. That's Power Rangers.
That's a way to do a TV show and not have to pay for the fight scenes.
Absolutely. It's a very cheap way to make a TV show. I wish more people would do it. but
just make a show and intersplice it with was it
Takeshi's Castle? Yeah. Whatever. Well, they did that, but they called it Wipeout, and now it's primetime on ABC during the summer. So congratulations to everybody.
Everybody's making money.
Yes, Takeshi's Castle. And they also did that, and they overdubbed it and called it Most Extreme Elimination Challenge. They did it four times with Takeshi's Castle. I think that they could do it one time with Power Rangers.
That's really getting some mileage out of that show, though. If you can do it four different times.
Yeah.
Now we have Ninja Warrior.
That's a different Japanese show, dude.
I know, but now we have one where it's in the States.
Yeah, it's called American Ninja Warrior. sure they went really hardcore with the name. What else all we right. got?
Other things on the entertainment news. Spider-Man sucks.
Who says?
The world. Have you seen it?
No.
I wanted to go
see it. It took me like 3 months
to
watch Captain America, dude. I am by myself. Maybe I should just go watch a movie tomorrow.
Yeah, don't go see Spider-Man, though.
I kind of want to see it.
Go
dude.
See Neighbors, if anything. Like, I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes.
Whoa.
Oh, are you anti-Rotten Tomatoes?
Absolutely, I'm anti-Rotten Tomatoes.
Whoa. Why is that?
Because there are plenty of movies. Like, Rotten Tomatoes is an algorithm. Like, come on, dude. I don't want my movie reviewed by an algorithm. I want my movie reviewed by one of my friends that saw the movie and then gives me their opinion on it. That's what I want. I'm kind of sick and tired of all this stuff of people watching movies. And this is just it this goes with I feel terrible talking about this because it seems like I can't talk about it without joining it. But because the fucking haterade is really getting to me. So it's like we all have to watch a movie. Then we have to slyly look out of the corner of our eyes as to who liked and didn't like this movie from popular media culture. Do the Personal Arrogance guys like it? Do the dudes from Harmontown like it? Does the Nerdist like it? And then we, for some reason, create this kind of hive mind around a movie of whether it's the greatest thing that's ever been produced or the worst thing that's ever been produced. And then that's what happens. It's like, I'm sure that Spider-Man probably has a lot of plot holes and is a shit ton of stuff thrown together in a movie and maybe not be the best execution. But it's probably not the worst thing that's ever happened in the history of cinema. But I bet you there are a bunch of people out there who are ready to pull out their guns and start shooting it as it is such. And so this haterade mentality of, am I going on a rant? I'm going on a rant.
No, it's fitting.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'd much rather go to the movie.
But it was.
And decide.
But I'm not going to. I've got to give it to Rotten Tomatoes. The general score helps me to determine because I don't go to two movies a weekend anymore with my parents. Like, I really got to kind of pick and choose.
Yeah.
So it's a fast way to determine whether I'm going to rent it because I will end up renting this movie because I like the first Spider-Man. And I'm willing to give this one a chance, but I'm not going to go and give it $15 worth of a chance.
$15? You know? What are you doing, man? Watch a fucking matinee. I go to the matinee down at the Majestic
Movie
Bay Theater,
day,
and it's
and
$8.
You got to go at like 10 a.m.
$8 for the 2:30 showing, brother,
ugh,
on the weekend.
No. See, I have to go at 10 a.m., and then it's $10 instead of – it's probably not 15.
I'm just saying,
like,
and like
13-something.
Spider-Man is the type of movie that I don't want to rent because I don't want to watch that movie on my television. I want to watch Spider-Man swinging through the streets of Manhattan on a giant fucking 90-foot screen. That is like the only way to watch that movie is to get something fun out of it. Like I also hate that people when they watch a movie and they decide to nitpick it to bits and then hate on it a ton. And then they're like, you know, and then it like robbed me of 3 hours of my life and I'm just fucking hating myself for it. And it's like, yeah. And then you spent twice the cost that it would have cost you to rent the movie. I don't know. I'm going on a rant.
Where are you renting your movies?
This has turned into a full-on rant. I apologize.
Wow, this is a side, though, that I did not know. I did not know.
I enjoyed
the idea of getting the personal recommendation, but few people see more movies than me.
Well,
I don't have that resource to turn to, so that's why I turned to the Personal Arrogance, by which I mean you.
I know, and I'll give you an honest opinion. Like, I didn't think that I really enjoyed Captain America. It kept my attention for 2.5 hours, which is not an easy thing to do in this day and age. Was it the greatest Marvel movie ever made? Probably not. Was it the greatest movie ever made? Nah, but it was worth the money. But the whole idea of just fucking waiting for everybody to decide as a hive mind whether a movie is good or not, and then decide, okay, now it's time to just shit on this thing forever. As the worst thing ever that's ever occurred to humanity. It's like, come on, guys. It is entertainment. It filled the need. You sat through the whole thing. It wasn't so bad that you walked out of the theater. And then at some point, even if you hate a movie, you're at least turning into the mode where you're like, oh, Well, now I could just nitpick it and then love to hate it. So at some point, it's filling some kind of need inside you. I listened to this rant today on Gravity, and it's like, dude, if that's the approach you're going into a movie with, like, a freaking with a clipboard and a pencil on the page waiting to rip apart every tiny minute detail that is associated with the film, and not understanding that it's actually a piece of fiction, and not understanding that maybe it doesn't adhere to the laws of nature because it's actually just a whole thing that was created in some dude's head. And maybe we should just sit back and try to understand the characters and be enthralled in the story and escape into a special effects CGI world for a couple of hours, then maybe you shouldn't be watching these movies. Maybe you should just watch documentaries, because those are usually 100% adherent to real life. My third time. I gotta stop. This is a rant. I apologize. This is the problem, is now I'm just ranting about this stuff. I don't...
I did not know I could dig that up.
You dug it up, man. You put a shovel in my chest.
Impressive. And I was wondering where we're going to go with that, because all I have is just Spider-Man Sucks listed on my entertainment news, and I was curious on your take.
And here's something.
Lane should stop going to movies, because his review thing on Rotten Tomatoes, despite the efforts of Electro, the franchise is running shockingly low on Jews. That's a top critic.
That's a dude who decided that he wants to be a movie critic, and he's just going to do 100% quotables for the rest of his life. That's a sad guy, man. That guy eats Honey Nut Cheerios. He eats Honey Nut Cheerios every day.
We should start a website, Rotten Tomatoes.
No, see, this is the problem.
Aggregate all of the stupid shit people say all the time.
No, quotables. See, that's the problem, dude. Now we're just hate reading Rotten Tomatoes. I want to get away from hate reading stuff.
It's an infinite hate cycle, though.
Hate reading, hate watching. Let's get away from it, people. Let's just rise above. Yeah, I didn't really like it, you know. But, you know, it kept my attention for a couple hours, so why not? You know, it's an escape. It's 2:30 on a Friday. I got nothing better to do. Why am I watching a movie at 2:30 on a Friday? I should be at work. I'm just saying, I got two nights now, because Saturday night, I believe, maybe I got three nights. And I'm going to be by myself. I'm going to go watch Spider-Man, because I want to see some CGI on the big screen, and want to see Paul Giamatti as a rhino. And if those two things occur, I will call my $10 good. I'm not going to think of it as a personal crime against my soul that the movie didn't fulfill my every wish and dream. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. This devolved.
No, that's right. Last bit of entertainment news. This one's actually a couple weeks old. Amazon getting the HBO TV shows.
Yeah, but it's none of the new ones.
Who cares, man? I can go back and watch Deadwood, which I have really wanted to do for a long time.
I'm excited about it, too, because when you say $5 for a movie, like, that's what I pay, because I rent all my movies through Amazon. Yeah. Roku. It's very convenient, and therefore it is worth the $5 to me, because driving to a Redbox and paying for it and then driving home will probably cost you about $5.
You drive either a very fuel-inefficient car or very far to rent your movies. Are you doing 30 Redboxes in 30 days?
I drive in a city full of stoplights and traffic, sir. but I also rent Fargo and Mad Men through Amazon, so I don't have to pay for a cable subscription, but I can still watch the shows that I love. The day after they come out for $1.50 a piece.
How is Fargo, by the way? I haven't been following it. Should I pick it up?
Funny you should ask, because if you are listening to the Bald Move Fargo podcast, you might hear a certain dude, a.k.a. me, chiming in every week now.
Oh, really? You're doing the cast?
Well, I'm doing a segment on the cast. They were nice enough to allow me to record something and send it in every week. So I'm doing that. Unless people are like, we don't want that anymore, and then I'll stop doing it.
Yeah, but people don't want to hear the song they've been playing for Game of Thrones, and they keep playing that song.
No, I'm excited about it. So I've been watching it, and I've been analyzing it, and if you want to hear what I really think about, especially this week's episode, you can tune in to the Fargo cast, which comes out every Thursday on the Bald Move Network. You got any other entertainment news?
That's it. I'm all out. Well, Ben Affleck was counting cards in Vegas.
Yeah, well, he wasn't in Rounders, was he? Or was he?
I don't know.
Matt Damon was in Rounders. So anyway.
He was probably around Rounders.
He was also in the World Series of Poker. I love it. So anyway, we got BallMove.com, guys. So much stuff going on at BallMove. Of course, we talked about it already, but Fargo is up on there. They're also doing an Instant Cast on 24, and they have their epic, epic podcast on Game of Thrones and Mad Men. Those are both occurring right now as well. Of course, there's the ladies down in Los Angeles from the Because Show. They're posting every week. And Up Yours Downstairs covering everything Edwardian this week. They are covering Mr. Selfridge, Season 2, Episode 6. So, guys, so much TV stuff, so much pop culture stuff, so much human love. That's what we want from a podcast, right? A couple of love going into your ear hole from my mouth hole. And that's what's happening right now. Love podcasts, baldmove.com. Also, you can get in touch with us if you want to. You can give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 360-362-0024. You can leave us an email at personalarrogance@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @personalpodcast. You can follow us on Facebook. We are at the Bald Move Facebook page, and we are at the Personal Arrogance Facebook page. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review us on iTunes. It helps us out so much when you do that. It helps us move us up the rankings, and it also helps new listeners find us because we've been moved up the rankings and we're more visible. It's really good stuff. Do all that stuff to get in touch with us. Speaking of Facebook, every week on the Personal Arrogance Facebook page, if you like us there, you will see it. It is the Facebook Roundup. We post that we are recording. We want to know what you want us to talk about, and then guess what, guys? We talk about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. I know. Just I gotta get a soundbite for that, right?
Yeah, I feel like you could come up with like a good Western one.
Yeah, but the movie one's kind of like that. I probably knew it. Just Facebook Roundup.
You're
yeah.
Right. Yeah, it does have a. You're what right. If you did like a Sergio Leone, like just a.
I like it.
A little bit slower.
All right. So this week on the Facebook Roundup, we're going to start off with our good buddy, Rob Zip from the Rob Zip and Friends podcast. He says, will your Levi and my friend Levi Reekend ever have a Levi off?
Oh, I kind of smell a Levi bracket. Maybe when Jesse gets back.
Yeah, James Patterson, dude, if you're listening, buddy, we need a Levi bracket. And this one's going to be tough. Because there aren't a lot of Levi's.
That's not true.
Okay.
Me, Levi Reekend, uh-huh. Levi Strauss, Levi who had a kid with Sarah Palin's daughter.
All right, so we're already done. Like we're already scraping the bottom of the barrel here. But if James Patterson could put together a Levi bracket, it would be much appreciated. Mitch says, thoughts on the new working title for Star Wars, The Ancient Fear? I'm hoping for Jedi versus Cthulhu.
Oh,
I don't think that this is going to be the title. Apparently, they're going to reveal the title at Comic-Con this year. Once again, convention season approaching. if it were The Ancient Fear, I would be very surprised. Because even if this were the title, I feel like they would change it for Comic-Con. They're not going to let it leak this way. This is Star Wars we're talking about, guys. Jeffrey says, Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire Gen 3 remakes announced today in case anyone's interested. I know that Jesse's interested because he's been playing a shit ton of Pokemon on his 2DS. Ron says, have you guys ever eaten at the Maximus Minimus food truck there in Seattle? They're on a bunch of Food Channel shows. Or general thoughts on the emergence of gourmet food trucks. I'm digging them. I like food trucks. There are food trucks in Boulder, right?
Not as many in Boulder, but there are a ton in Denver, and I worked there for a year, so I had plenty of food truck food.
Food trucks are good.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything bad you could say about food trucks.
Some health standards are a little lower.
Rolla Tomasi says, who's going to win the upcoming election in Ontario? And where in the world is Rob Ford, a.k.a. Carmen City? I have no idea how we would ever know who's going to win the upcoming election in Ontario.
I think Rob Ford is in rehab.
I'm voting for the Blue Jay. Jonathan Drow said, where's JR from Philly been? Which is interesting because then JR from Philly responded with, I have mixed feelings about the results of the breakfast bracket. Cold Pizza is an imposter. Cold Pizza is an imposter and a champion. So there you go, JR. He also says, no, in all seriousness, I've been busy doing things like running through the Tough Mudder with Jonathan Drows, but I am still accumulating beer articles to call in about. I'm up to about 6 tabs I've been keeping open on my iPhone for over a month, and Philly Beer Week is coming up in less than a month now. So apparently next show is just going to be nothing but JR talking about beer.
That's not a bad idea. That probably would have been a better idea this week.
Well, I think that, you know, we are at the end of the podcast, so I think we can reflect on this and understand that that is the correct answer, Levi. At least we're able to recognize it.
Maybe we just shelve this one, have him call in.
Yeah. Love it. Levi, the one thing I love about you is that we can make fun of you forever, and you take it so well.
And it's the only thing I got going for me.
It's one of the things I love about you, man. speaking of making fun of you, what are your recommendations this week?
I wrote these down. You can live stream the Earth. Have you seen this?
Mm-mm.
So, I think it was NASA. Somebody put a high-definition camera on the space station, and it is streaming. And the first time I saw the link, I went, and I didn't click on it. And then this morning, I got to work, and I was looking for anything to do other than work. And I put it on, and it is mesmerizing because the world is just like, you're watching it go around like at a decent clip. And it's fascinating. It makes me feel so, so insignificant.
I wish that there was some way to set that as your background.
Yeah. Oh, no, it'd be too distracting.
Cool, man. My first reco this week is going to be something I call pizza quesadillas. A.K.A. what happens when bachelor time happens in the Waffle's house. So this is something that I created. It is cheddar cheese with salami on tortillas in a quesadilla-style sandwich. And it's delicious. And I also want to give you a scenario here where I was trying to make quesadillas for the longest time. I kept on burning the tortillas, because I would have the stuff too hot, too cold. It's too tough because I'm trying to make it in a pan. I'd burn the tortillas and I wouldn't melt the cheese. It was like an awful, awful cycle that I was in. Then I realized in my brain that we don't need to melt the cheese on the stove. So what I do now is I just make a quesadilla. I put it in the microwave for like 45 seconds. It melts the cheese. And then I put it in the pan, and then all I'm doing is toasting the tortilla. And then I have a perfectly browned tortilla. It is incredible, delicious, and you put some salami in it. It's a piece of quesadilla, and I love it. Look for the pizza quesadilla food truck very soon in Boulder, Colorado. Levo, what's your second reco?
God, I turned on this stream, and now I'm so distracted. It's beautiful watching this thing roll by. My second recommendation is vinegar. If you ever need to clean something, just put some vinegar on it.
Just put some vinegar on it. Why did you think of that?
So we finally, we moved out of our apartment, moved into the house, and we found somebody to rent the apartment and get us out of our lease early. And so we had to go in over the weekend and clean. And the bathtub would not, I mean, it was really gross, and I looked up online and got the sweet trick that if you just soak paper towels with vinegar and just lay them out and leave it for like a half hour, things just come off. And then we just cleaned the whole apartment with vinegar. It's like an old school method of cleaning. It's fantastic, and it works way better than most of the chemicals we bought.
Nothing like cooking with acid or cleaning with acid. Well, you know, to go along with that, we actually use vinegar to clean everything. Lydia makes a nice vinegar and water solution. I don't know what the ratio is, but if there was only way to figure, like only if there was like some kind of database that you could access at any time to get that information. But you just put in a spray bottle. We actually use it to clean the kitchen. It's wonderful.
That's cutting it with water would have probably been smart, because there were a couple times where it would get in cuts in my hands and it hurt like a bitch. That's the only downside of it.
Dilute it.
I need that full strength.
And the Personal Arrogance Podcast is now turned into a cleaning podcast, which means only one thing. It has to end. Levi, thank you so much for being on the show again this week. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I'm really distracted by watching this.
Oh my God. All right, this has to end right now. Please, guys, remember, keep in touch, and remember that wherever you go,
and whatever you do,
please stay arrogant.